Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. Ta-da!
Yay! Welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And tonight, we are going to discuss resins. And I've never done a show on this before. I've included them as part of discussions for other magical purposes, but not by themselves. And I'm being nice and not burning any of it in the house right now because all resins smoke quite a bit when you burn them. And it's really only advisable to do if you have windows open, like multiple windows open, and or you remove the batteries of your
smoke detectors and things.
Right, because it does smoke. So
we have triggered the smoke detectors in our house by burning incense with resins, like frankincense and stuff, in them in the past. So we can speak from experience that they will trigger your smoke detectors. And if you're in a smaller space, like an apartment or something, you might want to open your windows just to get some airflow. Just because they can be, depending on how much you burn, they can be kind of intense.
That is true. And to start off with, I think it's worth noting that I believe all of the trees that these come from are types of evergreens. And at least three of these resins I'm going to talk about are from places in the Middle East, or also known as Arabia or the Arabian Peninsula, and
in that Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan kind of part of the world, mostly
but not entirely. And it's worth noting that everything that I have researched and looked up on, especially frankincense, and I'll talk about dragon's blood as its own thing, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but
because of dragons,
I don't think so. There is a tree called the dragon tree. Don't confuse that with the dragon's blood tree. And like frankincense and myrrh trees, they really can only grow in their native environments. I know people have probably tried growing them in other desert-type climates, but really, I don't think they will do well in the long run. These are desert and semi-arid environments, and in particular, these trees have historically been found in places that we now call, they had different names thousands of years ago, the exception of Egypt. Egypt is Egypt, although their borders have changed. East Africa, Arabia, Northeast Africa, parts of the Arabian Peninsula, as opposed to the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Oman, Somalia, and for myrrh, they are also grown in Ethiopia, Kenya, Oman, Somalia, and I guess parts of Saudi Arabia, although every time I've ever shopped around for organic or sustainably grown and processed myrrh in essential oil form, I've only seen it, well, and that might have to do with where I get my stuff from, because I'm much more picky. It usually comes from Oman and Somalia for both of these.
Okay.
They're not the same. They are different species. And I'm going to talk about frankincense first. They've been used, both of these, unlike some of the others, have been used culturally, religiously, and medicinally for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And for people who grew up with any type of Christian upbringing, most people are aware of the, who did grow up with that upbringing, either grew up in churches that still use frankincense and myrrh, and they have them in these big metal
sensors. Yeah.
And they still use it to cleanse and purify spaces. Now, what's interesting is that although Christian churches, it includes the Catholic Church, the Orthodox churches, and a few others, I think even Anglican churches, or I think, still use them, and they associate it with the fact that Jesus was given, in the story, he was given frankincense, myrrh, and gold as a baby in the famous story.
The three wise men.
The three wise men story. What is interesting, though, is that other cultures used this for thousands of years before the Jesus mythos came on the scene. It's been used as an incense for in many parts of the world. Again, because of where it originated, this is where, you know, these places that are now Oman, Somalia, Eastern Africa, et cetera, use them. And what's interesting also is that one particular group of ancient people came to prominence because they controlled the trade of frankincense and myrrh through Arabia, East Africa, and into India. And they got rich off of doing that. I do think, hopefully, most people are aware of the historical records of the spice trade or the incense trade. I've also seen it written that way as well. And frankincense, myrrh, went eastward as well, with some other goods, and the spices that are today's culinary spices got their origins in other places like Southeast Asia, China, etc., India as well. So frankincense and myrrh were part of that trade route early on. Again, thousands early as thousands of years ago. The trees are, again, a type of evergreen found in semi-arid environments. And like all the resins I'm talking about, the tree is not harvested, but the resin is harvested by making shallow cuts into the bark in such a way to let bits of the sap slowly flow out, and then it is collected, allowed to dry further. Now, here's one of my big jars, and it's worth noting that I don't even, it's been so long, and I bought a pound of it. Let's see, what year is this? 2021.
Yep.
This is at least 3 or 4 years old. No, it's probably older than that. Because I consider it to be precious, because even years ago, I was already starting to read that this resin was getting harder to come by, and I'll talk about that in a minute. When I purchased it, I did purchase a pound of it. I use frankincense in general. I use it more than myrrh because I happen to like the smell of it more.
Uh-huh.
But I've had this for quite a few years. It hasn't. It still has a slightly
sticky.
Yeah, it's very slightly sticky. Sometimes you will find it in bags, you know, in different New Age stores. That has still got a little bit of tackiness to it, and in which case it kind of needs to be taken out of the bag and allowed to dry out further. Can you use it? Can you burn it? Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
But when it is drier, then you can grind it up and powder it. There's two main species that are the ones primarily grown, and it is, they both belong to the Boswellia species. One of them is Boswellia carterii, and the other one is Boswellia sacra. And the sacra is the one that produces the lighter color, and it is a kind of a sweeter smell.
Yeah.
But both of them are used. And, in fact, a lot of times in New Age stores and other places online, they might not even list the genus and species of the tree it came from, just as an FYI. The sacra, the Boswellia sacra species, is more expensive. And this is also why one tends to see a wide variation in prices. What is it used for? Well, again, for thousands of years, it's been burned as an incense. It does have some medicinal properties. So it was used medicinally as well. It's associated with sun and fire. It's used for honoring sun gods, using fire festivals. Again, this is modern neo-paganism. But it is a spiritually powerful resin. From a plant botanical standpoint, and I learned about this years ago when I was learning much more about aromatherapy and essential oils, frankincense and a few other essential oils are able to penetrate the blood-brain barrier and therefore those essential oils can get into the circulatory system or through the olfactory senses into the circulatory system around the brain, and it does uplift your mood. It does provide and create a spiritually uplifted state of mind. It's hard to describe it unless you have been in a room and then burned it, and it does have a particular kind of cleansing and purifying effect on the psyche, which is likely why it's been used for so many thousands of years, because of its effects on people when you burn it. So as a result, for magical purposes, you can use it for cleansing and purifying spaces. You can use it for protection. You can use it also for banishing type of work. And yes, can you use it by itself? Definitely. You can also use it as part of a mixture for creating incense blends for burning over one of the little charcoal, round charcoal briquettes that you can find in New Age and pagan stores all over the place and online. You can burn the frankincense, and in their dried form, they're called frankincense tears. And they're little irregular, little kind of nodules that are found. When you buy it, you can buy it by the ounce. And there are a few places where you can buy it by the pound. It's worth noting, though, that it will be more expensive, definitely a bit more expensive by the pound. And one of the things I did want to bring up about this, and the reason why I don't use it very often, and I only will use it sparingly, not only does, when you burn it on a briquette, does it produce a lot of smoke, so a little bit will go a long way. But frankincense as well as myrrh have been over-harvested. And when I was doing my research for this, I was looking around to see what progress has been made. And in some places, there are some programs in place where there are certain regions in Oman, Somalia, and a few other places, maybe Ethiopia, where it is starting to be harvested more sustainably. Because the more sap you get out of the tree, the less healthy the tree is. And if you want to keep your trees alive longer, you can only cut so much from so often on the bark of the tree to get the sap to ooze out before it starts to stress the tree out too much. And again, like I said earlier, these trees are only found in these particular regions of the world. They simply do not grow in other types of desert-type environments. They're also very slow-growing trees, not surprisingly, because of the ecosystem that they live in. But you can use it. Again, you can use it for a variety of different things. You can use it, you can add it sparingly to other blends that have other kinds of herbs in it, and you still get the same effect. When purchasing this, I would do searches on websites, and for websites that specifically say that this is sustainably sourced. One company, and on the one hand, I don't always like to plug specific companies over others. One company that I've used for many years now, oh God, what is the name?
Mountain Rose.
Mountain Rose. Thank you, David. Mountain Rose Herbs, they are in, I believe, Oregon, and they sustainably source all of their stuff, including these kinds of products that are typically wild crafted mm-hmm. and not necessarily plantation grown, although you might find some that says it's plantation grown, which might mean that it is being sustainably harvested.
More sustainable,
yeah.
It's more managed.
Right, it's managed more carefully, and that means it's likely that this is going to be a little more expensive, but you can buy a few ounces and it will last you a few years. I also have pre-ground frankincense in another jar, and I've been using that slowly more than the frankincense for a couple of reasons. Number one, I have wanted a little more time for this to dry out even farther, even more. Also, when you grind any of these resins, it does take a little bit of elbow grease. Some people will use like an old electric coffee grinder, like the cheap ones you can get for $20 at a big box store, and they work pretty well, but it does gum up the blades. So if I've got to do any grinding, I use my mortar and pestle. No, I did not buy it in a magical store of any type. I bought it, I want to say it was someplace like World Market or one of those kinds of stores.
Yeah.
And I got it pretty cheap. It's a big black marble mortar and pestle, and it works really well at grinding up resins. I've used it for years and years. If you want something fresher, then you can take a very small amount, probably no more than a teaspoon of frankincense tears, maybe a teaspoon or two,
mm-hmm.
the most, grind them up, and when you put them into a blend, when it powders, it will still stretch and last quite a long time. So, that is frankincense. Oh, also the color of this, again, different species of evergreen, different family of trees. The Boswellia family, especially the Boswellia sacra species of frankincense tree, produces a resin that when it dries is this kind of pale yellowish color, and it is somewhat translucent. Myrrh, different species, different family of trees, it is Commiphora myrrha is the species that is typically what is used for myrrh, although sometimes a related species might be used in place of myrrh, a related cheaper resin. Myrrh is interesting, and it's interesting because there is a long history of documented use in all kinds of medicinal stuff. It was also used, as well as frankincense, for use in perfumes and ointments. But what's really interesting is that this was used extensively by the ancient Egyptians. It was used in embalming, and I suspect they may have ground it up and then added it to some sort of oil as part of the embalming process, or they got the sap, because it really is what it is, out of the tree and used it and mixed it with other resins and oils that way. I don't really know. I don't know how much information is out there about exactly the kinds of things that the ancient Egyptians used in embalming, but this was definitely one of the ones that they used. And in fact, legend goes, and this is part of ancient Egyptian history, that the one of the few female pharaohs ever in any of the Egyptian dynasties was Hatshepsut. And I've seen...
Hatshepsut. Yeah. I've heard the name. We've heard it on TV and stuff in the shows all the time.
We've watched stuff about the different pharaohs bunches of times over on... typically, it was Smithsonian.
Smithsonian, Science, National Geographic, and all those. Hatshepsut?
Hatshepsut.
Yeah.
She was known for a lot of things that she did during her reign, but allegedly one of the things that she also did was she secured access to the first myrrh trees in the Egyptian Empire at the time. That's how important it was in their culture, and again in their ceremonial practices. But here's some interesting medicinal uses. It was used to treat wounds. Had a number of different other medicinal uses as an analgesic, and in fact it was ground up and added to wine as an analgesic. It's also reportedly, I think, an abortifacient. So had a number of different medicinal uses, and not surprisingly, like frankincense, it's been used in, again, the ancient and modern Christian practices. Also, myrrh was also used in Islam as an incense. There's a particular line in the Quran that talks about burning myrrh with mugwort and thyme as a spiritual incense. So unlike frankincense, myrrh is associated with the moon and with the water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's associated with healing. It's spiritually uplifting. Also, it's used for purification and cleansing as well. But everything that I've read has different uses than that of frankincense. And again, for both of these, the formulary for creating essential oils from these resins wasn't the way it's done today. There are modern extraction processes used today. And for resins, what they would do is put it in some sort of carrier, probably ground up, set it in maybe out in the sun where it'll warm up and where the properties of the resins will mix in with whatever oil that they were using as the carrier for that. It may have been an animal fat as well, although it could have been could have also been olive oil, because olive oil has been around
for eons.
Really, yeah, thousands of years as well. So, yeah. Again, just like with frankincense, myrrh was used in perfumes. And what's interesting also, frankincense was, the frankincense oil, or again, as it probably created in an ointment form, was used in postpartum recovery.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, it's, you know, in these ancient cultures, it wasn't just the Egyptians that used it. The Israelites, the Greeks, ancient Greeks and Romans also use it quite a bit. And in poking around on some of these different sites and looking at some of these different sources, either one and or the other were written about historically by, like, Greek philosophers and stuff like that, too.
Right.
So,
it was way back.
Yeah. So, it's been recorded. The uses for them has been recorded, and at least as early as 1500 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, they've been used for time immemorial, and for frankincense also, it was used for dental problems, bronchitis and coughs, and if you look up aromatherapeutic uses for frankincense essential oil, you will see that it is used in certain types of respiratory therapy. But again, for magical purposes, cleansing, purification, clears spaces of negativity, and is highly protective.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, myrrh, spiritually speaking, magically speaking, is associated with use in healing rituals. So that's just the two. But wait, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
But wait, there's more. And one of the ones that I've become very curious about over time, especially because I've seen this sold in different New Age stores, and I know what dragon's blood is supposed to look like in its form, and this is another one that when bought by the pound, it is pricey. I've bought it from a few different places over the years. When it is imported into the U.S., when it is packaged, and if you buy it by the pound, a lot of times it's in its whole form. It has this big kind of lumpy thing, and what the people do who collect this is that, just like with frankincense and myrrh, shallow cuts are made in the bark of the dragon's blood tree. And again, it's another type of evergreen kind of tree. And the nature of this resin is a little bit different. It doesn't produce sticky, globuly tears like frankincense and myrrh do. It comes out differently. So they collect it, and they'll collect it into bags, because you can see the shape of the bag that it was in.
Yeah,
and
it's wet when they gather together. It's still kind of wettish.
Right.
Yeah.
And then let it dry out completely.
Stamp it.
The origin of entry, I guess, or origin of
where it came from,
I've seen this over and over again, and it shows this is where it comes from. It's this big gold star that's stamped in the dragon's blood resin when it's still...
So that when it dries, you've got a stamp of where it came from and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and
for
so...
For importing purposes and everything, yeah.
Right, and what is very different about dragon's blood, if it is true dragon's blood, it's only going to be harvested from one species of tree. And the tree is found in one place on the planet. It is part of the Socotra Archipelago in the Arabian Sea. I'm not sure if it belongs, if it is its own independent principality or region, or if it is part of the country of Yemen. But when it dries, because of how they process it and because of how the resin dries, because it's different plant, different species, it does powder differently.
Well, it's part of Yemen. Yeah,
it is part of Yemen.
Socotra is part of Yemen.
And again, it is a semi-arid climate that is in the same general part of the world as frankincense and myrrh, but it's highly unique. It is considered vulnerable, so it does have a vulnerable status as far as environmental consciousness and conservation is concerned.
Yeah, because it is only grown on that island.
That's it.
And that's it. And it's an ancient trees. They've been there for, like, since prehistoric times, these trees. It's a very unique area there. And, and there are some who say that, by 2080, they could lose almost half of the habitat for these trees because of climate change. So it's a pretty big kind of a thing. And that's why, for some of these dragon's blood and some of these others, you see the prices going up. And they get more expensive because there's more work trying to be done to conserve these trees and save them and stuff. And, you know, that's, they can only make, you know, a single tree can only produce so much resin that can be harvested each year or whatever, you know, for it to sustain and survive and thrive. So, you know, there is kind of a limited amount, and these are slow-growing trees. They don't grow fast, so...
Right, they can live for 600 years.
So if you plant one today, it could be, you know, generations before you can start harvesting anything off of it. So
right.
It's a very slow process for that, yeah, so...
Yeah, and I don't know how easily they are still... Like, they can be... new species can be...
Or new...
New trees... can be planted because of where it's found and the slow growth rate. Again, I don't remember. It's been so many years since I purchased this, I don't remember.
The same stuff that we got as a big block, like, God, that was how many years ago?
I remember
breaking it up into pieces and, like, used the mortar and pestle to grind it down because we tried a coffee grinder and just gummed it up.
Right.
You know? So we... Yeah, I remember we just used a mortar pestle, like, you know.
And I still have...
To break it up and just, you know, pump it down.
What I use...
That was a couple pounds. That piece of resin, that was a couple pounds worth.
It may have been 2 pounds, but I thought it was only maybe one whole pound.
Might have been a pound, yeah.
Because it'll get lighter as it dries out, right?
About the size of a softball. Maybe a little bigger than a softball.
Yeah, a little bit bigger than a softball.
Yeah.
I have... I don't know, a third of this jar left. And for storage purposes, what I've used are jars like old pasta jars, good old ragu. The container I have the dragon's blood in was the big Yankee Candles jars. And I, you know, what do you do with the glass when you're done with it? Well, I cleaned it out. I ran it through the dishwasher. And then I used alcohol inks to, of various shades of red to design the outside. I've got some glass paint in gold and black, kind of decorated the outside. And that's what I've used. So I did that, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So it stores these resins great. And
they seal up nice.
They do seal up nice. But for magical or spiritual purposes, it's used in modern neo-pagan practices for healing, protection, banishing. It's used to clean spaces, especially if you've got negative energy in a space. And you can take a small chunk, powder it up, and it'll produce a lot of smoke, not unlike frankincense when you burn it. It's very smoky, so you only need a little bit of it. It is interesting, though, that it has been used. This is not the only purpose. This is one of a laundry list of purposes that has been used. Dragon blood has been used for centuries. What's interesting is that the people of the region, although I'm sure they burned it, it was almost like a cure-all for a wide variety of different things. Now, what I've seen it used for is more, again, metaphysical stuff. It's supposed to increase the potency of spells for protection, for love, banishing, for some, also sexuality, although I've never used it for that. I've always, energetically, whenever I've burned it, I've always associated with it having highly protective energies and energies that are good for banishing negative energy and clearing away energy. As a use, though, and again, oh, I didn't even tell you the name of the species, and this is what you want to look for, as for resins that are true dragon's blood from the tree. It's Dracaena cinnabari. Dracaena cinnabari. If you look at pictures of this tree, the leaves and the branches fan out only at the very top. And that's where the leaves are at the very top of the tree. It looks like, well, it looks like an umbrella. And it is an important indicator species of that ecosystem. As it turns out, the tree is associated with the health of a number of species of organism that rely on the tree for survival, protection, etc., including a number of species of geckos, lizards, and other species of organisms. The people of the region historically used it as for digestive health. It was thought to speed wound healing, and some healers used it for respiratory issues. And in modern times, although I'm sure it's still used, probably regionally, medicinally, it was added as coloring for lipsticks and even varnishes, like in the 16th, 1700s, violin makers added it to varnishes for their violins.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So some of the very old violins that have a very particular reddish hue,
uh-huh.
I suspect they probably had dragon's blood. The powdered resin was added to it.
Right, to give it color.
Right. And it does have stimulant qualities as well. So while we use it metaphysically here in the neo-pagan world, it had a whole bunch of other different uses. The last resin I'm going to talk about is copal. And this is another one that you kind of need to be careful of, although you may be able to find different types of copal resins from different parts of the world, and it might be easier to get than the three that I previously mentioned, simply because those tree species of trees,
yep.
frankincense, myrrh, and dragon's blood, the trees are either endangered or vulnerable, depending on what reference you read for conservation purposes.
Uh-huh.
Copal trees come from evergreens, different species in different parts of the world.
Oh, yeah, like Mexico, South America.
Right.
Central America, yeah.
One of the first uses I ever heard about associated with copal was the stuff that came from Mexico and Central America. Although later on I learned that, and if you're not sure about where it comes from, you may or may not want to buy it as a result. The Mexican or Mesoamerican copal is different. It's a different species. Not only does it come from a different species, it's a different family of trees. And in general, the word copal means, the general definition of copal is it's any resin that is in its intermediate stage of polymerization between the resin form and the amber form is the generalized term for copal.
Okay.
But for incense purposes, I think we are talking about something differently.
Right.
Definitely. So the stuff from Mexico and Central America is Protium copal, and the family of trees it comes from is the, Berseraceae. Say that
three
times fast. The copal, and this is the stuff that I got, although years before I did get it from someplace, from other company, and it was probably from somewhere in East Africa. It was a black copal.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay. There's a notable difference in the effects on me, I guess, spiritually or psychologically, when you burn the Mexican copal, which is a very pale color. It, while it looks similar to frankincense tears, it is lighter in color. And the very pale stuff is the protium copal. Although it does smell similar to frankincense, I do think it has similar qualities as being used to bless spaces, cleanse spaces, clear away negative energy, energy blockages, etc. Could you use it interchangeably? Maybe to some extent you probably can. Although I think you would want to maybe work with if you're not used to working with these, maybe burn tiny bits of these separately, smell them, see what the effects are on you or in any sort of magical working that you're doing. But again, with all these resins, they do put off, you know, a decent amount of smoke. It's worth noting that it's still used in churches in Mexico. It's used in Day of the Dead celebrations. And for those who are not quite aware, the Day of the Dead celebration is, I guess you could call it, something that's morphed into the celebrations of today in Mexico that has its roots in ancient Aztec practices or ancient Mayan practices. You don't see it in South America, but you do see it amongst, or even that much in Central America. It really is, has its prominence in Mexico, and of course with the large Mexican-American population, you do see it in actual celebrations, not goofy things in Halloween stores. In southwestern U.S. states. The other source of copal, one of the species, and it's probably only one of multiple, again, it comes from typically East African countries. It is Hymenaea verrucosa is the Latin or scientific name of this other type of copal resin. And so, in a, you know, as I and me and David and many other people have gone into our fair share of pagan and New Age stores over the years, some do a much better job than others at listing the origin of the resins. And this is why I think you have to be a careful shopper when going into stores. If it just says copal or frankincense, it's nicer to know what it is you're actually buying.
Which one is it?
Yeah, which one is it? And as much as I like to try, you know, when the occasion suits it, when I need to get something and I can possibly find it locally, I can be really picky about what I buy and where I get it from, especially with the resins, because I know that until, I know, fairly recently, there wasn't that much attention being paid to sustainable sourcing of these. And that's why I think it's important for people to pay close attention to what they get. And, you know, when you buy it, this can be something that will last you quite a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Mountain Rose Herbs is not the only company that sells, but I do like it because where I know they get their stuffs from. And I'll give you an example. There's also other kinds of again, different parts of the world. This is the copal that Mountain Rose Herbs sells is from Shorea Javanica is the species. And no, I'll have to look it up to see where it comes from.
What is it,
Sickle Pop? Oh, it is, the species is Shorea javanica, S-H-O-R-E-A, J-A-V-A-N-I-C-A. And these trees come from tropical climates, typically. Although, again, I'm not sure about the East African sources.
So it really kind of comes down to the copal trees. There's different species of what they call copal, from different species of trees from different parts of the world. And what defines copal typically is the color or type of resin it is. It's not specifically which tree it comes from, because there are the Mesoamerican copal trees that obviously were not used in European or Middle East practices prior to the, you know, European expansion to the North American continent, but there was use of copal, and I'm air quoting copal, in Europe and the Middle East prior to Europeans coming to North America, but those are from a different type of tree.
Exactly, exactly.
And now there's also a copal from like Australia, New Zealand, from like New Zealand, Japan, Dominican Republic, and other parts of the world, what they call subfossil copal, which is found under the trees in the roots and the fossilized roots and stuff like that. So, whereas dragon's blood is dragon's blood. It comes from a tree, a specific species of tree, and that is it. If it doesn't come from that tree, it's not dragon's blood. Frankincense comes from frankincense trees. Same thing. Frankincense only comes from a specific species of tree. If it doesn't come from that tree, it's not frankincense. But copal comes from a variety of different species of trees from different parts of the world, and as such may have different energetic attributes, may smell differently, may feel differently, may look different, but they're all called copal.
Yes, that is the take-home message
When
it comes to copal. So when buying copal,
pay attention to where it's coming from.
Buy small amounts to start with if you haven't worked with it before.
Uh-huh.
And, again, like all of these, be judicious. And this copal, again, because I looked it up from Mountain Rose Herbs, their origin is Indonesia, which...
Right. That one is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different part of the world. That's not the middle, Middle Eastern area. That's a whole different area, yeah.
And like I was talking about earlier with one of the other resins that's sometimes used in place of myrrh, it's called opopanax. And I've also seen it in essential oil form as well. Sometimes you might find from certain magical / new agey, I don't want to call them big box stores, but sort of big box stores, where I've seen this resin mixed with frankincense and myrrh and maybe one or two others as a blend. In, like, their tier form and not ground up.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the magical attributes of those are, what physiological or mental or spiritual effects you get from burning the opopanax resin, but I've seen it in blends. It's also worth noting that like frankincense and myrrh, I think you can also buy it in essential oil form. So the frankincense that is sold by Mountain Rose Herbs is the Boswellia sacra species, and it comes from Somalia.
Okay.
So I do see that a lot as a source. Country. Sometimes also Oman. So the essential oil that I've gotten from, there's one or two other places I get it from they do small batch processing, and they also sell organic essential oils, and some of their frankincense essential oil has come from Oman. So. And the myrrh gum resin that Mountain Rose Herb sells also comes from Somalia. So, just as examples. But, yeah, do your research. Look around. Buy small quantities to start off with. For example, the myrrh gum resin sold by Mountain Rose Herbs, it's $35 for a pound. So it's not cheap. But you can buy in smaller quantities again.
But a pound will last you a little bit.
Oh, good grief. A pound will last you for years. And if you have them in darker jars or in a cabinet, in glass jars, because it tends to be a little bit better for the glass jars, using glass jars rather than plastic, sometimes the plastic can be hard to clean.
Won't use it for anything else.
You just won't, yeah. That's it. That's its permanent use. Again.
But glass is typically more appropriate, really, generally, because it also doesn't absorb it. And you can keep it dark. You know, you can paint the glass dark or cover it or something like that, too, so it stays, so it doesn't get affected by sunlight, by light and stuff, too.
Right.
Yeah.
And, again, like all of these, it'll last you quite a long time.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, that is it for my primer on the wonderful world of resins. And stay tuned for more stuff going on this month. On CSNP, we have, again, our regular lineup of Sunday shows that are encore presentations by Selena Fox. Selena also has her weekly Wednesday show, Nature Spirituality. Our next show is 2 weeks from tonight, and we will be doing our full moon ritual at that time.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'd like to thank everybody listening now and in the future. And, of course, we'd like to thank Circle Sanctuary for allowing us to do this work every month.
Yep.
So.
And thank Laura Gonzalez for all the work she does with social
that's
media
right.
and the planning.
Laura Gonzalez and Casey Pope, and there's a few other new people. One of them is Juliana.
Right.
And a couple of other folks that also do promotions because they're the ones who get this information out to the ether. So.
Yep.
So what music do you want to pick?
I thought maybe Elemental Chant.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Spiral Rhythm.
Spiral Rhythm.
Okie dokie.
Well, thank you for listening, and many blessings.
Blessed be.
Earth, my body, water, my blood, air, my breath, and fire, my spirit.
My breath.
water my blood, air my breath, and fire my spirit.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.